Anyone else? Okay, so just a few ideas to help make our program a little bit more meaningful, I hope. So it's actually interesting the placement that Megillat Esther and Purim get in the words of Chazal. If we look at source one, this is taken from the Yerushalmi. We're told a very mind-boggling statement. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon ben Levi. Rabbi Yochanan says, Nevi'im and Ketuvim, and eventually when Mashiach comes, Atidim Libatel. We're not going, our Tanakh is going to be much more abridged, much easier to carry around in our pocket. Right, most of the Nevi'im and the Ketuvim are not going to be part of our Tanakh. According to the first opinion, Chamisha Chomshei Torah, Chamisha Sifrei Torah, not Atidin Libatel. And Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, okay, so according to Rabbi Yochanan, right, our Tanakh is basically going to look like Chamisha Chomshei Torah. According to the second opinion, Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, the Tanakh will be a bit thicker, it will be Chamisha Chomshei Torah and Megillat Esther. Right, Megillat Esther will not be Nitbatel. Why? Because what does it say in the Megillah? The Zichram lo Yasuf Mizaram. At the end of the Megillah, it says the Zecher of what happens will never cease to be part of our future generations. And therefore, even Bimot Mashiach, Yoshua, Shoftim, all that, it's going to be Nitbatel. Megillat Esther will still remain as part of the Tanakh. The Rambam goes further to say this is true both of Megillat Esther as well as also. Our calendar is going to change. And I remember I used to teach in Manhattan Day School. The guard, she wasn't Jewish, right? Her first year, she's like, this Jewish school thing, it's awesome. She's like, you get so many vacations. You know, when I worked in public school, like, all we have is Christmas, right? And New Year's. Here, it's like every month, another holiday, right? Bimot Mashiach, our calendar is going to change. All our holidays are going to be canceled. No more Pesach, no more Yom Kippur, no more Sukkot. But what will remain? Purim. This is very puzzling, right? We like Purim, it's fun, we get dressed up, we have a suda, but like in our mind, if like one holiday was going to exist, right, what would you vote? Would it make a little more sense? Maybe Pesach, that's like the foundation of our Emunah, okay, good choice, what else? What? In Shavuos, we got the Torah, that's pretty fundamental. Yom Kippur, that's the day the people who never go to shul come out of the woodworks, right? Purim, I wouldn't consider, there's no Isser Melacha, right? It's like one day, right? Well, most holidays in Israel, so, but whatever. I guess they're sort of stretched into, you know, 7 or 8. But why Purim? Why Purim? Why Megillat Esther? This is especially puzzling regarding Megillat Esther, because if we look at, look at source 4, right? Source 3 echoes the same idea, right? That's also taken, by the way, from the Megillah, because it says in the Megillah, not only those who are coming in and need papers, please feel free. Zichram le'yasuf, right? It also says in the Megillah, v'imei ha'purim ha'eila lo ya'avru mitoch ha'yuhudim. It's underlined in the Rambam. These days of Purim will never pass away from the Jews. They will always exist. Okay, right, so we said this is very puzzling. But it's especially puzzling because the truth is when Esther was written, she barely made herself into the Tanakh. She had to go and convince herself to the Chachamim. Right, she goes to them and she says, Kidvuni Lidorot, right, I think we probably even have a sefer here written by Rav Bachrach, maybe, called Kidvuni Lidorot about Megillat Esther. She goes to the Chachamim and says, write me for future generations. And they're like, okay, on what merit should Megillat Esther make it in? This is detailed in the Gemara in Source 4. And, okay, the ikar of Megillat Esther is an expression of Mechiyat Amalek, right? So on that merit, she should make it in. But they said, you know what? We already have Mechiyat Amalek in the Torah. We have it in Nevi'im. We have it in Ketuvim. We don't need you. In the end, I'm not going to go through the details. Those who want to see it, can see it in Source 4. In the end, based on a pasuk, 3 times or 4 times, and they hammer it out and said, okay, fine. It's maybe 4 times we can have Mechiyat Amalek. You can make it in Esther. Right? But she, like, barely, you know, like, she barely made the cut. Right? She was almost rejected from the Tanakh. In the end, finally, after a back and forth, they decide, okay, we'll let you, we'll squeeze you in. And yet, Bimot Mashiach, like, what she's in, she's never leaving. Right? Bimot Mashiach, Megillat Esther will remain forever. And of all the holidays, Purim will remain. Now, just as a side note, I'll mention, we know the, right, who was the main, like, Masih, the one who took issue often with the Rambam? What? The Rebbe, right? So the Rebbe says, what does this mean? You can't ever erase pieces of Tanakh. There's no such thing as a piece of Tanakh that doesn't have an eternal message, right? And hopefully when we learn Tanakh, we see it in that way, right? So he says, we don't mean we're going to erase parts of the Tanakh. That's, like, impossible to conceive of. What he says, the Rambam, what he says the Yerushalmi meant, right, is that we will cease from reading them publicly. Okay, just to bear in mind, there is that debate, but nevertheless, right, Megillat Esther still is given higher accord. And in terms of what does it mean that these holidays, Pesach, Yom Kippur, are going to be canceled, right? So one way that we can at least wrap our mind around that, because it's very hard to imagine these are such fundamentals, could be based on the Nevuah, the famous Nevuah, that when we will soon, Bezrat Hashem, experience the miracles of Yimotz Mashiach, we're going to think about Yitziyat Mitzrayim like child's play. It'll be like, right, Kriyat Yamsuf. You think that was big? Look what Hashem did when the third Beit HaMikdash came. Look what Hashem did with Makatam. That's like nothing compared to the Nisim we're going to see. So the new holidays we're going to have to celebrate the miracles that we look forward to very shortly, Bezrat Hashem, are going to make the old ones that we celebrate pale in comparison, that we will no longer celebrate those, perhaps. We will celebrate new ones. Just to at least understand what that might mean, right? But still, regardless of how we understand what it means, that we will no longer either read publicly the Tanakh or even have them as part of our Tanakh, or we will no longer celebrate the holidays as we know them, nevertheless, we see that Purim and Megillat Esther get a surprisingly special status. Let's try to make sense of that a little bit. So we said, on what merit did Megillat Esther make her way into the Tanakh? Right? Based on being a sefer that expresses Mechiyat Amalek. So let's take a look together at sources 6, 7. You're going to do this, right, on your own. 6, 7, 8, and 9. If anybody could try to find a word that repeats itself in each of these expressions of a an interaction with Amalek. Okay, 6, 7, 8, and 9. I can't even promise you, like, you know, first one who gets it gets, like, a chocolate bar. I love this, like, you know, walking in on a fast pace, like, the smell of chocolate. Interesting. It's been cooking since last night, so I'd like to. That looks, yeah. Cool. Okay. Something to look forward to, right? I'm sure we all want to break our fast and tell me. Okay. 6, 7, 8, and 9, right? What word do you find repeats itself in each of the expressions of Mechiyat Amalek? Good. The word machar, right? As in, back in Parsha Peshalach, when we have our original battle of Amalek, right? Sehi lechem b'Amalek, right? It's actually, we're going to see, it's very hard to know how to read where we pause for Machar, but right, Machar, Anochi nitzav al Rosh HaGiva, right? It's Sefer Shmuel as well, Macharatam, we hit them, as well as in Megillat Esther, it's a very surprising, very strange use of Machar, right? Esther goes in, after fasting, and it's scary, right? She goes into Ahasuerus and makes a big request, right? I want you and Haman to come to a party. Okay, that's not so weird, right? It's like maybe they need time to prepare. Okay, the party's tomorrow. But at that party, right, she gets, Ahasuerus, we know from the beginning, is like a moody person, right? She gets him in a very generous mood. And he says, Esther, what can I give you? Ad chatzia malchut v'te'as. This is her golden opportunity. We would expect this is her time to make her plea. And what does she say? Come to a party tomorrow. Who knows what kind of mood he's going to be in tomorrow? How do most of us, from a superficial read of the Megillah, how do we interpret why she's saying tomorrow? Because what went on with Esther, we think? She probably... She got scared. She lost her nerve. She got scared, right? I still remember... Like in the beginning, trying to make Shabbos plans. I'm like, I don't know. I think my rabbi, my shul, gave me his daughter's number. And I was like, it was Wednesday night. I really needed plans, but I was like too shy to call. I was like, I just called to say hi from your father, like, or something, you know, like, I'm sure she spoke to her father, like, was, you know, way, like, more recently than I did, right? But, like, you know, you have a plan of what you want to ask, but suddenly you lose your nerve, right? And you say something else, right? Come to party tomorrow, right? We just think she's pushing it off. Because She's scared. She lost her nerve. Maybe tomorrow I'll get up the guts to ask. Really, there's actually something much deeper going on, that there is a reason that each of the battles against Amalek, we find, dafka happen machar. In fact, though, right, the seeds of this debate between Klal Yisrael and Amalek, and the fact that often it rides on the issue of machar, has its seeds in the original interplay between the predecessors of Klal Yisrael and the are there any more girls somewhere? I thought I made another. Yeah, great. Okay, good. I found a girl another Sunday. Between the predecessors of Klal Yisrael and the predecessors of Amalek. Who was Amalek's great-grandfather? Esau. Okay. So let's take a look at a few interesting exchanges between Yaakov and Esau, where again, we see that it surrounds this discussion of Machar, Hayom. Okay. When Yaakov is cooking his soup, right? Sorry, guys, right? He's cooking, right? We are now on source 10. We look at 6, 7, 8, and 9, the word machar appearing. We haven't made sense of it yet. We are rewinding back to the original interplay between Yaakov and Esav to see that once again we find this idea of machar hayom appearing. Yaakov is cooking soup. Along comes Esav and says, give me some of that red stuff. And Yaakov says, on condition that what? Pasuk lamed aleph, vayomer Yaakov, michra kayom et bechorat chali. Sell me, like today, this your bechora. Right, we know that, where the girls wear the extras, right? Over there, if you want to take one. Sell me, like today, your bechora. Esav is more interested in the soup than in this annoying burden called bechora, which really involves having to serve Hashem and the Beit HaMikdash, and according to the Midrashim, right, he wasn't so interested in that. Soup appealed to him much more, and he agrees. But that word kayom does not seem necessary. It would have been just as readable, and in fact probably more readable, to say vayomer Yaakov michra et bechorat chali, sell me your bechora. Why does he insert that word kayom? We're not yet going to answer. We're not going to make sense of the whole thing, but what I will mention to you what the Midrash says on that word kayom. Jump down to 13, we'll look at 12 in a moment. 11 and 12, right? If we look down on 13, the Midrash relates, sell me like kayom, says the Midrash, like that day in the womb where Yaakov and Esav had a discussion, right? Where they said what? Look at the Midrash in source 13. Mikra kayom et bechorat chali, right? Amru. Kshaya Yaakov ve'esav ve'me'e iman, amar le Yaakov Esav, achi, shnei olamot lefaneinu, ha'olam hazeh ve'olam haba. Two worlds, we're about to leave this womb, we're going to enter the big wide world. Two worlds are out there. Olam hazeh, olam haba. What do they comprise of? Olam hazeh yesh bo achila v'shtiya u'masa u'matan lisa isha u'lehu l'lid banim u'banot. This world, right, eat, drink, be married, get married, have kids, right, av olam haba. Ain't bo kol hamidot halalu. Olam haba isn't about those pleasures. Right? It's hard work, it's spiritual, you don't really get that physical gratification. Tol ata olam hazeh, v'ani atol olam haba. You go take olam hazeh, let's split it. Let's make an even split. You take olam hazeh, I will take olam haba. Shene'emar michra kayom et bechorat chali. Right? When he says, sell me like that day, he's reminding him, ko'oto hayom shayu v'bet an imam. Miyad kafar esav v'tchiyat ha-metim shene'emar hinei anochi olech lamut. Right, Otasha Natal Esav Chalko Olam Hazeh, VYaakov Natal Chalko Olam Haba. Right, Yaakov is reminding him now of that discussion and saying, "Remember that day where we decided you're going to take Olam Hazeh, I'm going to take Olam Haba." And Esav's like, "Yeah, you're right. I'm much more interested in the soup than in this, you know, avoda thing and spiritual thing called Olam Haba. I feel like I'm going to die now. I'm much more interested in this food and Olam Hazeh, which is my chelek, than Olam Haba." Somehow this word kayom is giving us a clue a little bit, right? Kayom is a reference to olam hazeh. And machar, right, we will continue to develop further. One more exchange between Yaakov and Esav, and then we'll attempt to make sense of what's going on here. If we fast forward a little bit, right, he sells him the soup. Then we have Parshas Toldos, where Yaakov, whatever we want to say is going on, but he goes in, dresses up, gets the bracha. Esav comes home, finds out what happens, wants to kill him. Yaakov goes to Laban's house, is there for a long time. They meet up again in Parsha Vayishlach. They make up, right? They have the brotherly reunion. And Esav is feeling very brotherly toward him, and he makes the following invitation to Yaakov. What does he want Yaakov to do? Right? You know, let's be brothers again, right? Source 11. Let's travel together. And what does Yaakov say? You know, Yaakov's really not interested in this partnership. What does he say? You know, I have little kids. They take a long time, right? We walk slowly. You, Esav, big, right, strong guy, you walk fast, right? If we try to keep up with your pace, they're going to all die. You know what, yeah, Esav, you go ahead, right? We'll catch up with you. As in, like, you know, don't call us, we'll call you, right? Did Yaakov really have intention of catching up with Esav? No, right? It's his way of pushing him off. But ask the Midrash, right? Yaakov said, right, his words are, he doesn't say, you know, I'm not interested, you know, let's leave it as like we shook and made up and, you know, let's part our ways, right? But he seems to give him the indication that he's coming, right? He says, you know, the kids and the tone, like they're weak and, right, we can't keep your pace. Yeah, we're not doing nilaf nam, you go ahead. And we'll go at our pace. We'll go at the pace of the tzon and the children. But eventually I'll catch up with you in Seira. Right? He doesn't say, you know, Esav, let's keep things the way that they are. You go your way, I'll go my way. So the Midrash says, we scan the entire Tanakh, right? And we never find Yaakov catching up with Esav, right? Says Midrash, Ad Asher Avol Adonis Seira, says Rabbi Avahu, Chazar Mal Kol HaMikra, we look through the whole Chumash, V'lo Matzano Shalach Yaakov Avinu Eitzel Esav Har Seir. Right, Miamav, he never caught up with him. Efshar Yaakov Amitzi Haya. Right, we know Yaakov's Midah is the Midah of MS, right? Is he saying Sheker here? Right, stop. Right, not for now, but food for thought, right? Yaakov's Midah is MS, if you really think about Yaakov's life. Lots of seemingly shady experiences. Life, quote me a few. The Bechoros, right? Tricking Yitzchak with Lavan. What about Lavan? Leaving in the middle of the night. The whole thing with the sticks, right? That he comes out. You know, Lavan agrees because he thinks he's getting the minority of its own. Yaakov does this whole cool thing with the sticks, right? And and outcome. Right, a lot of speckled sheep, so you remember that story. Right, lots of things in Yaakov's life that don't seem, he gets tricked by Lavan. Anybody who wants a further discussion of this can look in Rav Dessler and Chelek Aleph, he speaks about this, Yaakov's Midah of Emes, but not for now, right? So asks the Midrash, could it really be Yaakov, the exemplar of Emes? Speaking Sheker here, right? Those things, are questionable acts, but it's not an outright Sheker, and none of them, right, is Yaakov saying an outright checker, right? We know Rashi, Anochi, Esav, Becharecha. Rashi wants to say Anochi, I am I. Esav is your Bechor, right? You might call it a white lie, you might correct, but it's not an outright checker. Here Yaakov is saying, I'll catch up with you, and we never find he does. And this really troubled, right, Rabbi Avahu. Afshar Yaakov Amiti Haya Umurameba, when he's tricking him, then he feels better. He looked a little further. Ela Imataihu Batzlo. Lasid Lavo Hadhu Dechtiv and Ovadia Ba'alum Moshiya Behartio Nishbot Atarisav. We do find Yaakov catches up with Ovadia. I'm sorry, with Esav when? As it tells us in Ovadia, right, the Geula is gonna start, right? Hashem is going to first put his retribution on Har Seir and Edom, right? Ba'alum Moshiya Behartio, right? Nishbot Atarisav. The Mishpat is gonna start in Har Esav. So we'll see you then. That's when he catches up with him. Now let me ask you a question, right? Let's say I left my house today in a big rush. It has happened before, and oops, I don't have money. And I really have to, like, I don't know, catch a cab to tell you. Anybody have 200 shekel I could borrow? Right? I'm sure you'd all be, like, nice and generous. I'll pay you back. Lots of love, right? Mashiach comes, I'll pay you back. Right? How many people are willing to, like, you know, make a deal with someone where I'm going to make good on that deal? Lots of love. Like, since when is that a legitimate, right, agreement? So when is that considered being honest? That, like, yeah, you know, I'll pay you back. Lasid Lavo. Like, since when do we operate in that fashion? Right? This was Margia, this pacified Rabbi Avahu, because yes, Yaakov is being truthful because he does meet up with Esav. La'asid lavo. Why does that work? Let's try to make sense of that. And through that, that will help us understand why machar is this key idea central to every expression of Mechiyat HaMelech. What was Esther doing by pushing off Achashverosh? And why is it that Megillat Esther and Purim will never be canceled? Explain the Pachad Yitzchak in Source 14. Pachad Yitzchak written by Rav Yitzchak Kuttner. He explains the following. A person, and this is an interesting clown, right, in life, right? A person and their words are viewed through the prism of who they are. And you interpret their words, right, based on who they are. Right, those were in my Haggadah class. This is making me think of the fact that we recently talked about how we know that there are four expressions in the Tanakh of four sons. Right, they're not labeled in the Torah as Rasha, Chacham, right? And the Baal HaGadah, his ingenuity was to say, this is a Tam, right? This is a, right? And part of that is, right, you can, right, but not so obvious, how do we identify, right? From the package of who it seems that they are, what the answer is, right? You get a glimpse of what kind of person he is, right? Meaning how a person speaks is it a reflection of who they are. So says Rav Huttner, Esav was a person who was an Olam Hazeh person. He was steeped in Olam Hazeh. Yaakov was a person that for him, Olam Haba was not some far-off reality. Olam Haba, in fact, I think it's the Zohar who says, Olam Haba is called Olam Haba because for certain people, it's Olam Shekfarba. It's a world that they are operating in this world. They talk, they speak, they do business, right? But in their mind, they are really living on another plane. They are living in this world with every action that they do in this world connected to a loftier purpose. And their motivations and the choices that they make are highly connected to how is this getting me one step closer toward Olam Haba. In fact, it's also one of the explanations of why does it say Kol Yisrael Yeshlem Chelek Le'Olam Haba, not Be'Olam Haba, because many understand Olam Haba is not just a place, like Be'Olam Haba would be in Olam Haba. Le'olam haba means that we can, right, it's something that we can already live a little bit. The reality of olam haba, if we're connected, can live already now. As in the statements of Chazal and Gemara, Ezehu ben olam haba, it doesn't just mean a person who will get olam haba. But like you say, like a ben or a bat yeshiva, or a ben or a bat Eretz Yisrael, someone who's living there now and connected to Eretz Yisrael or a yeshiva right now, right? We mean a person who, any of the promises that Gemara makes, a person who says Achri three times, so Mechulu Tzvila, right, is a Ben Olam Haba, right, not for now of why that is, but they are a person who is living currently the values of Olam Haba. So Yaakov was such a person. Yaakov was a person that, yes, he functioned in this world, but his goal, his motivation, his choices were all rooted in how is this connecting me to my higher purpose, toward Olam Haba. And he said that when a person speaks, right, so you interpret them through the prism of who they are. So since, for Yaakov, Olam Haba was not something in the far off distance like for us. Like if someone said to you, I'll pay you back in Olam Haba, we'd be like, that doesn't work. Because like, we know what's supposed to happen, but do we really believe? Do we really look forward to it? For most of us, it's like this thing we kind of, you know, fuzzily know, but it's not something that we think about, certainly not on a daily basis. But for Yaakov Avinu, since Olam Haba was so real to him, says Rav Huttner, the plain meaning of his words, without any indication of such, otherwise, right, Olam Haba is a reality that it works for him to speak and for him to legitimately mean, Esav, I'll catch up with you in Olam Haba. That's not sheker for him. Olam Haba is real to him. And that's why when he wants Esav to sell the Bechorah to him, he has to insert that word Kayom. Because Esav could play the trick back to him. And he could say, I'll sell it to you, but I know Yaakov. You are a person who lives Olam Haba as a reality, so I'll play that game back to you. Sure, I'll sell you the Bechorah, because since I'll talk your language right now, in Olam Haba you can have the Bechorah. So Yaakov Dafka has to insert the word Kayom to say, even though normally when I speak, Olam Haba is like a real place for me, is a real time that I'm waiting for. And therefore one can interpret my words as taking effect in Olam Haba. He has to insert the word kayom to say, right now, Esav, I mean, today, in Olam Hazeh. He had to add it because Stam, when he speaks, Olam Haba was such a truth to him, such a reality to him, that right, his Stam speech could very much be interpreted as taking place in Olam Haba. So why is it that each of the expressions of Mechiyat Amalek take place Machar? Amalek, many interpret, right, this is Tazad Hashem, Shabbat Zachor, right, many of us might feel a little funny or it might be strange, that's like, why is it that everyone has to make an effort, right, to hear Parashat Zachor this week, to remind ourselves of the responsibility to wipe out Amalek, right, like, you know, we don't expect to find any Amalekite walking the street, right? None of us are planning to pull out our swords, right, to kill anyone from Amalek. Why is it still so significant for us to every year hear this parsha about wiping out Amalek? So the Al-Sheikh and others explain that why is this mitzvah still relevant and highly important? That Amalek is not only a nation, but Amalek represents a force, a spiritual force in the world that we have also internalized. That each of us have a piece of Amalek inside of us. This is proved through the Pesukim, right? Macho emche et zecher Amalek. Why the double lashon? Because first, macho, you have to first wipe out Amalek inside of you, and then Hashem will take care of the physical people called Amalek. But first, we have to erase the Amalek inside of us. And Amalek is a certain koach that we have internalized that even in the absence of a physical nation called Amalek, in Tavshin Ayin Zayin, we still have the responsibility this Shabbos to remind ourselves to rid ourselves of the Amalek voice inside of us. And who is Amalek? Who were they as a people and who are they inside of us? Amalek, the gematria of Amalek is Safek. Amalek is a nation that comes to cause a question in our minds, specifically about this issue of Machar. In fact, one of the main psukim, the original battle of Amalek, one of those four psukim that we looked at. If you look, it is pasuk tet. It's in source. I brought it for you again in source 17, right? But we had it also originally in one of those 6, 7, 8, or 9, right? What does Moshe say? Ve'yor Moshe al Yoshua, b'char lanu anashim, v'tzehi ilachem ba'amalek, right? Machar anokhi mitzav al rosh ha'giv'ah. Okay, if you notice, I struggled a little bit with how to read it. Why? Because what does the Gemara say? There are five words. This is the Gemara in source 15. Chamesh mikraot b'Torah ein lahem hechreya. We have five words in the Tanakh that we don't actually know exactly how to read. Okay? And it lists them. Se'et mishukadim. Right? Machar arur v'kam. Five words in the Tanakh that it's very unclear how to read them. One of those words is machar, and it's precisely our word. Right? Because why? Somebody tell us, where should we put a comma in Pasuk Tet? Starting with Sehi Lachem. You really start with Bachar Lanu Anashim. Moshe says to Yoshua, quote, somebody put our comma in Bachar Lanu Anashim. Where do you want to put the comma? What are really our two choices? Before or after Machar. And where you put it changes the meaning, i.e., it could be, he's saying to Yoshua, Bachar Lanu Anashim, v'tzehi lachem ba'amalek today. Machar anochi nitzav al Rosh HaGivah. Tomorrow I will be in Rosh HaGivah. Or you could read, Bachar lanu anashim v'tzehi lachem ba'amalek machar. And when you do that, I will also be in Rosh HaGivah. It's unclear how to read it, and depending on where you put the comma, it will make a difference in the meaning. Dafka, right, around this word machar. Because who is Amalek? Amalek is a nation that comes to bring suffix, particularly about the issue of machar. They come to bring, right, to cause us to question, yeah, is there really more to this world than meets the eye? They come and say, you know what, right, go, enjoy, live life, be happy, live it up, live for the here and now, like Esav, I want the soup, I'm hungry now, that's all that matters to me. Why, Yaakov, are you missing out, right, on all the pleasures of this world just because you believe that there is more? You really think so? Look at what you're missing out on now, right? You don't work on Shabbos, you can't. You're missing out on so many opportunities. Right? There are places you won't go, pleasures you'll never experience, just because you think, really, there's this God that's watching. Really true? The power of Amalek, both in the physical expression of a nation, or an individual like Esav, and the nation of Amalek, as well as the internalized voice of Amalek inside of us, are those times that we wonder, yeah, right? Is it really worth the sacrifice? Is someone really watching? Is there really a bigger picture? Is there really something bigger that I'm striving for? I feel like I'm losing out right now. And therefore, every battle of Amalek is on Machar, right? In fact, I don't think I brought it for you, actually. The Maharal, I guess I'm bringing it for you. The Maharal says, as Lashon, I don't remember exactly, but something that every battle against Amalek happens, Machar, right? As we saw was evidenced, right? That whenever we fight against Amalek, it's Dafka Machar. Why? Because part of, right, we even know in that original battle against Amalek, it was a battle that had to be fought not only with swords, but it has to be fought spiritually, right? Moshe with the hands, right? Famous Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. What's Moshe doing here? V'chiyadav shel Moshe osot melchama. Moshe's hand, they're up, they're winning, they're down, they're not winning, right? Why? Because what was going on with his hands? Really? They would look up, right? His hands would be up, they would look up, they would strengthen their amunah. Clear that to vanquish Amalek, we had to first strengthen certain foundations, a certain amunah, right, within ourselves. So the battles happen machar, because the way that we battle Amalek is really first by addressing the philosophical debate that we have with Amalek, where they say it's all about Hayom. This world is about the pleasures, the fleeting pleasures of this world. And Yaakov comes to say, no, there's more to this world, right? There's more that we're striving for. There is a world of Machar that is just as real to us, if not more real, than the world of Hayom. And therefore, all battles happen Machar. And when Esther, right? We misunderstood Esther. When Esther gets Ahasuerus's grand invitation, whatever you want, Esther, I'll give it to you. And she says, come tomorrow. This is not Esther being wishy-washy. This is not Esther just pushing things off, right? This is not Esther losing her nerve. This is Esther understanding that to vanquish Amalek, I have to insert the elements of Machar, because Machar is how we battle them. When we strengthen ourselves with the conviction that there is a world of Machar that is far more meaningful than the world of Olam Hazeh. This, by the way, can also make sense of a reality that's a little bit new for you girls this year, right? The fact that you're going to be in Yerushalayim this year. I know some of you are also going to try to really live up Purim and go to, right, places outside of Yerushalayim, but being, right, people who are living in Yerushalayim this year, you will all be celebrating Shushan Purim. Yes, we have a concept of like Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galuyot, right? But that's not what's going on here. This is a very strange phenomenon that we have, right? That certain people have a nut, right? That there's a second day of Purim. Where does that come from? Right? That came from when they were, right, when Mordechai and Esther come back to Ahasuerus and they make a request, and what do they say? They say, Ahasuerus, please allow us to have one more day. Lasot machar kidat hayom, so that we can make tomorrow like today. They want another day. They want another day of celebration, another day of, and that's why we have Shushan Purim. Right? Shushan Purim, right, to realize that by celebrating that extra day, Shushan Purim is a day where Esther says, right, we want to make tomorrow like today. We want, as part of our victory against Amalek, we want to make tomorrow as true to us as the way that we feel today. So Shushan Purim Dafka, which you girls will be celebrating, right, has even more of that spirit of Machar, that, right, that koach of seeing Machar as real to us as we see Hayom, and is connected to these concepts. Now, before we talk about what does this mean practically for ourselves in terms of how to celebrate Purim, let's just relate this back to what we started with, right? So why is it that La'atid Lavo, all the Svarim will be batel, Purim will be batel, the Svarim will be batel, but Right, but I'm sorry, right, all Svarim, all holidays will be batel, but Purim and Megillat Esther will be forever. How does this relate to this element of Machar? Right, Latid Lavo, we're going to be living in a whole new reality. And therefore, the guidebook for living in Olam Hazeh, as most of the Torah is, right, which are, right, is no longer going to be relevant to the reality that we're going to be living in. Only Purim and Megillat Esther, which is already in this world a sefer and a holiday that screams the world of Machar, will still be relevant when we live in the world of Machar. And therefore it's a sefer that already now has the ruach of the world of Machar, the world of Atid Lavo, the world of Olam Haba. And therefore it still will be relevant, Latid Lavo, when the others, which are geared for living in the reality of this world, will no longer be relevant. Right? But it's precisely because of Esther, of Megillat Esther and Purim's connection to the world of Machar, that they will have entry and they will have eternal, lasting nature in the times of Atid Lavo. But this new understanding, right, of Megillat Esther being Dafka Sefer that emphasizes the primacy of the world of Machar, the holiday of Purim being one that expresses that concept, what does that practically mean for ourselves Purim is really about? So, okay, I'm being recorded here, so I have to be careful, right? But there's a concept which we will not actively actualize this year as members of Shalom for Women. We're aware that there's a concept, right, in the Mishnah Berurah, right, of people drinking, right, on Purim. And again, Michelle, if you're listening, right, nobody here is drinking, right? That's not what I'm encouraging. But where, in fact, right, where does that concept come from? Why? Just for us to understand in concept why there's such a concept. What do we know Chazal say about wine? Nechnas yayin yetzah sod. Now, it's not just like when you want to get someone's secrets out, go give them wine. But that wine is really, right, when a person loses a little bit of their, right, they loosen up a little bit, their real selves come out. And actually, that's why, just as another plug for why it is that we're not going to be drinking this year, right, or maybe ever, right, I don't know, I'm not getting there, right, Ravolbi actually says that since drinking is a test, a little bit of like your real self comes out. He says only really an Adam Gadol should take that test because it's scary. Most of us are going to fail, right? If anybody has the experience, has ever had the experience, which I have been zochet to see a suda, right, of Talmidei Chachamim, right, who are fulfilling that mitzvah, right? It's actually very beautiful, right? The very only divrei Torah come out. They're like their simcha with the Torah. They're dancing, right? It's actually something very lofty. But we know that every koach can be abused, and therefore a person who's not holding there. So they don't want to take that test because the soul of who they really are is going to come out and maybe not such nice things are going to come out. And so therefore, says Ravolbi, most of us should not put our bodies to that test of who is the real you, right? And therefore, a person, there are other ways to fulfill the mitzvah without going that far, right? And he encourages us, most of us, to operate in that fashion to fulfill the words of the Mishnah Berurah. Anybody who wants to look that up can look up what Ravolbi says on it. So therefore, what does it mean in concept, though, right? Why is he cautioning us, right, that most of us, since we're not an Adam Gadol, are not going to pass the test? Because Purim is the day, is kind of like the litmus test of who is the real you. What really is motivating you? Are you a person that really is driven by the flashy lights and the immediate pleasures of the world of Amalek, the world of Olam Hazeh? Where the immediate gratifications, the tangible things that we can feel satisfaction from in this world, that's where I draw my satisfaction. Or Purim is the day, are you really living? Yes, you're operating in this world and you're a normal functioning person, but are you really living with the energy of Yaakov Avinu, that you are operating in this world with the awareness that your life in this world is really connected to a higher purpose, that your actions are connected to a higher purpose? If we read together, it's probably something we should all know by heart. And if you don't yet, you should commit it to memory, right? The beginning of the Ramchal to his Sefer Mesilat Yesharim, where he really tells us why we're here. Why are we in this world? Says the Ramchal, Yisod ha-chasidut v'shoresh ha-avodah ha-tmimahu sheyitbarer v'yitameit etel ha-adam ma chovato ba'olamo ולמה צריך שישים הבתו ומגמתו בכל אשר הוא עמל כל ימי חייו? Right? What is the foundation of what we're supposed to be doing here? That every person should verify for himself, why am I here? And where should I be putting my efforts? It sounds so basic, right? If somebody, you know, gave you a fully paid plane ticket and flew you across the world, you would wonder, like, what do you want me to accomplish? What am I supposed to do? And yet we were given, like, this ticket to be in this world for a long time, 120 years. And some people never pause to stop and, you know, the one who sent me here, what would you like me to do? Seems pretty basic. And yet people live their whole life without actually wondering, well, what was I put here for? Right? The basic, right, he says, is to figure out why are you here? And he answers, right, that there, even though the individual expression of that will change from person to person, actually is indicated by his words, ma chovato be'olamo, because it is, at the end of the day, a unique answer for each one of us. There still is one guiding common denominator that guides each of our personal decisions of why am I personally here? And he says, what, right? We have to all realize that we were placed in this world really for the purpose of Olam Haba. We were placed here for what we can achieve in Olam Haba. Olam Haba is, right, the world of connection, the world of Dveikut. V'hinei ma shehorunu chachameinu zechronam levrachahu. Sheha'adam lo nivra ela litaneg al Hashem. V'lehanot miziv shchinato. Shezehu ha'tanug ha'amiti v'ha'idun ha'gadol michol ha'idunim sheyicholim limatzeh. We were placed in this world, Hashem, out of his chesed. It really, to understand this, you have to really dovetail it with Derech Hashem, if anybody has learned Derech Hashem. Hashem in his chesed, he just wants to give. He wants us to give us the absolute best good he can. So maybe he can think of some choices. I don't know. 3-month prepaid vacation to Florida, right? Some of you live there, right? Maybe that's not so exciting, right? But that's nice, that's fun. 3 months! But it will end at a certain point, right? And all you, right, okay, I shouldn't give so many food examples, right? And all you can eat in like your favorite restaurant, right? That will end at a certain point, right? A big house, a really, really big house. 5 stories. That's great, but any physical pleasure Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to give us is limited. So since he wants to give us the ultimate good, he gives us connection to ultimate. The absolute greatest pleasure is to connect to infinite, to connect to him. Now, the only true place that we can do that, Makom Ha'idun Hazeh, is really in the world of infinite, in the world of Olam Haba. Ki hu ha'nivra, that's what it's created for. Ach ha'zerech, to get the way to get there, is through this world. And then he goes on to give the famous, mashal really, of Olam Hazeh is like a corridor to get us to the banquet hall of Olam Haba. Right? Maybe in more modern terms, the mashal that I think works for me, at least, right, is to think about it like an airplane ride, right? When you came here for the year, or most of you, right? Most of you live here, right? So it was clear to you, wherever you were coming from, that the airplane is just a means to get you to your destination, which is Israel. You would look at someone as very strange, right? You probably would not want to be friends with them this year. If the person sitting next to you, like, these seats, they're so comfortable, so much leg room, and the food, doesn't beat it, right? Halal, they have the best. You know what, Lance? I'm just so comfortable here. You go to Shalvin for one. I'm going to stay here, right? It's just so comfortable here. The food is so good. Maybe I'm going to, like, change things a little bit. I'll bring my interior decorator and I'll, like, you know, reupholster the seats a little bit. Maybe I'll get some, you know, Dougies to order. But, like, I'm going to stay here and make this my destination, right? Like, I'm glad you're staying here, right? Like, you need help, right? That's not normal, right? Most of us have an awareness that a plane is just a means to an end. This person sounds ridiculous, but is that not so different from what we've done to Olam Hazeh? We've forgotten that it's just the airplane ride. Okay, it's not 12 hours, it's 120 years, right? But in the grand scheme of eternity, 120 years is not so long. We're here on a long airplane ride to garner fuel, which the Ramchal says are basically mitzvot and passing misyonot. That's the fuel that we're going to use to get us to our real destination. Right, but we get comfortable, we redecorate a few times, we get a little bit too involved in the physical enjoyment and pleasures of this world, and we forget that we're really here on a journey. But ideally, if we take the words of the Ramchal to heart, and we understand that this is just the means to an end, That means ideally we are supposed to live in this world with the awareness of, is this decision, is this action going to bring me one step closer toward the dveikut that I'm enjoying, that ultimate pleasure that I'm looking forward to in Olam Haba? Is this decision going to get me closer? And Purim is really the day to ask ourselves, what's really driving me? Right? We all get excited if we're, you know, trying to lose some weight, right? So we're excited when we're successful. Are we as excited when we lose a few pounds, when we shave off a few layers of our kas, of our gaiva? Does that excite us in the same way? Does that mean anything to us? Right? We're all high achievers, right? In Shelvim, that's why we made it here, right? Nothing wrong with enjoying, you know, doing well on a test. But do we get the same excitement when we have a juicy piece of Lashon Hara and we pass the test of not sharing it, right? When we could answer our parents in a chutzpahdik way and we hold ourselves back? That's passing a test with flying colors. But does it mean the same thing to us? Right? Or am I a person that only gets pleasures out of the tangible, concrete world of Olam Hazeh, like an Esav, like an Amalek? Or does the world, do I believe that there's really a world that you can't perceive to the eye, but it's a world that's no less real for me? And Purim is really the day to do a cheshbon nefesh, right? To wonder where, right? We think of Amalek as something very, you know, far from our reality, but am I actually more in line philosophically with the world of Amalek? Or does Purim come to be mechazek me in the world of the machar? In the world of, there's more to this world than what meets the eye. And Purim has a koach, if maybe I've been somewhat deficient in that area, Purim has the koach to strengthen ourselves, to want to live a life that is more connected to the world of machar. So I'm hoping some of these ideas, right, can enhance our Purim and make it a little bit more meaningful. I will also, unrelated to what we spoke about, but just encourage you that there is a tremendous, it sounds like David will be speaking about these concepts, but there's a tremendous koach to Purim. With all the hololut and all the craziness of the day, to carve out some time. I'm sure we've heard at some point that Purim, Yom HaKippurim, right, Yom Kippur, it's almost like Purim, it almost reaches Purim, but Purim is an even higher level than Yom Kippur. Power of Tefillah of Purim is extremely, extremely powerful. So I'm hoping that we will make use of the power of the day, make use of the power of Tanis Esther. Tanis Esther is also actually very powerful. It's a unique fast from all other fast days. I'll speak about that really fair. I was going to strip it in the beginning, but I see we have a couple minutes. I'm just going to quickly just say something about Tanis Esther, because I noticed it's not on the schedule today, and it kind of in the desire to talk about Purim kind of gets lost in the shuffle. But just two words about Tanis Esther, and then we'll hopefully maybe get an even longer break a little bit. Tanis Esther doesn't make so much sense that we're fasting it. Why? Does it make sense that we're fasting for the lack of Beis HaMikdash on Tisha B'Av? Why? Because we still don't have it. Tanis Esther was a danger, but it was a one-time danger that's over and finished. It's no longer a danger that we still are in. I am sure that in the times of the Crusades, in the times of the Spanish Inquisition, I'm sure there have been many fast days for an impending danger, but we don't fast all of them anymore. Why are we still fasting Tanis Esther? So it's interesting that when the Taniyot are discussed, all the other Taniyot, the Rambam says, are Zecher L'Tzara. Makes sense to remember the Tzara, no Beis HaMikdash, the Sinas Chinam of killing Gedalia, the Chule. But Tanis Esther is Zecher L'Tanit. We fast to remember that they fasted. That's weird, right? What's really going on? Tanis Esther, connected to the Koach HaTzvila of Purim, Tanis Esther were actually fasting to remember that they fasted. Tanis Esther actually teaches us a fundamental perspective on the way we should be reacting to Tzara. Most of us make the mistake in thinking, what is the relationship between Tefillah and Tzara? I have a Tzara. Hopefully I do daven. But davening is just the means to the end. What's the end that I hope for? Not being in Tzara, Yeshua. Understood, Mordechai and Esther. This world, like the Ramchal said, this world is the world of connection. The world of, I mean, that next world is the world of connection. But this world is to help us experience, get toward connection. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants a relationship with us because it's the very best thing for us. He wants it for our good. He wants a connection with us. And when sometimes we need a push to be more connected to Him, He will send a tzara. But the goal of the tzara is the tefillah. The goal of the tzara is the connection that will come from turning to Him and davening. And therefore, tefillah is not a means to a Yeshua, but rather a tzara is a means to a tefillah. A tzara is a means to get us to draw closer to Him as expressed through tefillah. Mordechai and Esther understood that. And therefore, when there was a tzara, they said the reaction is, we're going to fast, we're going to daven. So much so did they understand that at the turning point of the Megillah, what's the turning point of the Megillah? When do things start to turn around? What would you say is like, from here on in, things like...
When Mordechai tells Esther that maybe it's like this day that you're chosen, and then...
I would say even, I don't know if which is first. Good. Right, when he saves Achashverosh's life, and then, I have to see in the Megillah which one comes first and after. That definitely is a very important point in the Megillah. But, we start to see things turning around, right, and working in the positive direction when, right, Haman is riding Mordechai on a suit. Like, this is a big turn of events. Here's Haman walking Mordechai, the Levush Malchut. And everybody saw that as, like, things are starting to turn around. It was, like, an ironic turn of events. And what does Mordechai do? He's wearing Levush Malchut, and he comes back, and he puts back on his sack the Efer and continues to daven. Because he understood that if the goal of the tzara is to daven, I don't stop when things are when Yeshua comes, because the goal was the tefillah. And therefore we fast Tanis Esther, Zecher Latani, to remind ourselves, here's a tzara. The point of it is to bring us closer. The point of it is to daven, because this world is about getting closer. Right? So Tanis Esther is still here, even though the danger of Haman is not here, to remind ourselves that that is the reaction of the Jews, right? That when we're faced with tzara, we realize that it's really just meant to draw us closer. We realize that tefillah is the reaction. And Tanis Esther is on the calendar, right, to remind us that that is the proper formula. So just some ideas to walk through the day with, some ideas to hopefully enhance our Purim. I wish you a Chag Purim Sameach, and have a good day. Okay.
Thank you so much.